Each time we meet love. Get you back in here.
Yeah, yeah.
Cheer up, Brian. You know what they say? Some things in life are bad. They can really make you mad. Other things just make you swear and curse. When you're chewing on life's gristle, don't grumble, give a whistle. And this'll help things turn out for the best. And always look on the bright side of life. Always look on.
standing here, looking at you. Well, let me tell you that it hurts, hurts so bad.
Hurts so bad.
It makes me feel so sad.
Hurts so
Caesar's chain.
Carolyn, could you pretend you're Ginny introducing me the way Ginny introduces you on your Monday show?
Here we have the famous B-O-B-D-O-B-B-S, the most awesome creature on the planet, on two legs, just walks around with his shorts on, nothing much else, and he just irradiates and exudes the most incredible energy that I've ever seen. He looks better going to bed than he does getting up in the morning. And how can you do that? How is that even possible? This guy is so awesome. Here I've been with him for 50 years. I can't believe my good fortune and luck and incredible magnetism that I must have to attract such a creature as Bob. I must be also the most important person in the world that you can ever imagine, because how would such an awesome person as Bob stay with anyone if they weren't as awesome as he was? Shall I continue?
Yeah, that's pretty good. Maybe you should wrap it up.
And there we have it, folks. B-O-B.
Building Organic Bob. Okay, yeah, you should hear what Ginny says about Carol every Monday. It's pretty interesting, trying to get them to string all the intros together.
So I suppose everyone's muted so they couldn't hear me, or I couldn't hear them respond.
No, well, actually disconnected, so I redo it. I did have,
we're talking in
Brian.
The wilderness. Oh, Frank, Leon's excited. Frank's excited. Ginny, Sarah's excited.
Yeah, I think it's Brian. He was walking along and then he was talking. He was unmuted. So I had to mute him about 3 minutes ago. And now we got Bert here. I'll unmute him.
Mm-hmm.
And let's just see what people wrote. Sarah's there. Okay, so Mark says, who do this? You'll have to come on and tell me which one that was, Mark. I was on the toilet, so I missed the last timings. Carolyn says, brain cleansed and not brainwashed.
Yeah, there's... Frank was saying something about you MK'd Ultra him into loving Trilin.
You have MK Ultra'd this track into my all-time top 20, Bob. I mean, that's, you mean this one?
Future
Islands? Well, that's great. It is a fantastic song. Sarah says, hi, I requested this because I just couldn't be sure Bob would play it. Leon yells Bobby with a heart. Sarah says, in the studio video, it sounds like they sampled Twin Peaks intro. What, the Future Islands, Sarah? I don't know what you're referring to. Carolyn says, brain cleansed, not brainwashed. Nikki yells out Connie. Mark says, Bob, who do this? Oh, I guess he means that, Future Islands. That's what they're called, Future Islands. And then Sarah says, that Sam guy is something else, so talented. And Monster Voice, yes, Sam Herring or something is the lead singer. And Sarah says she loves him. And then Frank repeats the Letterman and says, how about that? Then Leon says, good night, Flock. Are you saying good night, Leon? And then he tries to put a symbol up, but it doesn't work. Frank says, Bob, all excited. And Leon goes, yay. Frank goes, Connie, everybody comes.
Yeah.
Sarah already came or can't come. She just goes, like Ginny, not Ion. She corrects me. Still the grammarian. Leon goes, Bobby, damn, I came big that time, Bobby. Frank yells, Connie. He thinks he's coming over Connie. Leon, 50 years old, amen, Carolyn, says Leon. Mark says, yeah. Frank swears, yells Connie again. Leon laughs. Sarah goes, ah, ha, ha. Leah goes, Bob. Sarah goes, calling now. Sarah says, yes, Bob. The bad, bad, not goods. So we have a lot to catch up with Bert. Bert's been processing Bob Land for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, we have a quorum. We have a quorum.
Yeah, we have a quorum.
Here.
Yeah, like that guy Dennis Michael Lynch, the guy in Long Island who does his walk and talks to his Trump supporters, and he sort of just does phatic stuff the first minute or two while he watches the meter on his phone go up to 1,000. When there's 1,000 people, and he gets 1,000 right away, then he starts talking.
But do you see how he's short of breath?
Yeah, he's
right
all
away. I mean, these guys are so unhealthy.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Did you watch it enough to see him going by the houses on the Hamptons selling the mansion sales?
No.
What
no.
JW used to do, the estate sales.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And what else? So Bert, he hasn't had a chance to comment on my great epiphany of September 21st and 23rd that prepared the world for the whatever happened on the 23rd.
Which didn't.
I think Bert would like that pattern, 22-year waiting.
Did anything happen on the 23rd?
Yeah, I happened. That was, we were on the show, and I was telling everybody, playing the evergreens from 22 years ago. And then McLuhan, I found this little document where he says electricity is frictionless. I thought that should wow Bert and wow Roxy. She put on the Facebook, amazing. Yes, Bert. Any ideas about that?
No, I mean, I re-listened to it this week, and it just blew my head off because, I mean, the frictionless and how they outlined it, and then you found out that McLuhan, you found that clip, I mean, that article, or that sentence, and it synchronized it up, and I'm like, wow. Yeah, the letter, yeah. And
he only said it once.
I re-listened to the Evergreens just yesterday again, and I'm like, man. That, I mean, it doesn't get any better than that.
That part, those quotes.
That part.
Those quotes,
yes.
You read, yeah.
The frictionless. I mean, then there's also the whole how there was one segment they were talking about how the man found out they were connected to the machines, and then finally they found out that they could be, the machines are extension of them, and how everything changed, and it's like, damn, that's what Bob has been saying for quite a while.
A long time. They said that very quickly. I think that's the 89, September 12th, 89 or something. You know, Cold Fusion got announced in March 23rd. And Michael Blake Reed gave a talk in public at a major hotel in Toronto, and I went to it, and he talked about the announcement, which had just happened a couple days earlier, and he said, this is big. The Cold Fusion thing is real. Pons and Fleischmann and real, and so he personally was onto it right away. And then the Evergreens, I don't know if I didn't get a chance to talk to the Evergreens till September about it, but immediately they made that statement, going from humans were inside the machines, extensions, robots of the machine, but now with the digital post, no, with the cold fusion, frictionless energy, now humans would be bigger than machines, and the machines would be extensions of us, and humans could hop from one system to another. Whereas in the industrial mechanized era, they were trapped in a robotic situation, robotic box. So that was a good, I got told that. And then I was told about the frictionless. I have to check the order of that, but it took me, I guess, 5 years to really get it in. And then I wrote a manifesto later in 95 after the second Evergreens input, either frictionless or the non-fractionalization. Or the fractionalization of machines. Humans were fractionalized in the mechanical dehumanized era. And then the superhumanization, McLuhan called it in Take Today in 72, of the electric world, prefiguring what cold fusion would do. So that's where I got this pretty nice scenario that evoked ion in 95. I nailed it with my Up the Orphe Ante. Remember you said you were going to go back and read that, Bert?
Yes, I need to go back and read it, but what I did is I jumped into your Scott Woods rock critic.
Yeah, what was Bob, that?
You gave us the whole website. You gave the website.
No, the rock critics. You listened to the whole rock critics thing. Okay.
No, I haven't listened to all of them, but because I kept like listening. I was listening at work, and then I would go back and listen. Bob, I understand Chad's what Chad said. That when he first heard you, he thought you were a computer program until he met you.
Yeah,
I understand
yeah.
that. I mean, that gave
I
me.
You sound like a high tech person. You mean?
No, just that is not. You're not human. The insight that you're giving is rock. The insight. I mean, I'm just on November. I'm on the fourth. The third one. And because I started listening to work number one, and I kept going back and making notes and going back, and then I was like, I finally got to I'm almost finished with the third, but the insights about private identity and sex
and
being the other stuff. I mean, it's just my goodness. Everything. The first two. You blew him away. You blew me away as well, because it was like, man, you unloaded so much in those first two sessions.
Yeah.
That I have another I have a question for you. Just start off, because I asked you last year, but I didn't take the note, because I heard that quote you did of McLuhan, that every 200 years, every 12 months we live 200 years. But and I asked you last year, where are we now as far as are we living 200 years every week? I mean, with ion in the slowly coming into our sphere here, but it seems to be a little different now. I mean, with YouTube, how everything that you laid out there far as music.
Bert, by 2000, it was no longer How Fast We're Living. We had been wiped off the planet. We were gone. And then my Manifesto 95 anticipated that and said, okay, we will bring you back. Are you ready to reappear with the D-cell and the cold fusion? That's what the Manifesto says in 95. Everybody's disappeared. We were the first. We were the Adam and Eve of the new kingdom, the new Garden of Eden, say, and we were going to offering to reappear everybody. So, you know, all doom scenarios happened a long time ago, and it's just about how many will be retrieved.
Oh.
And so by 2000, yes, everything's disappeared. All devastations possible have happened. And I began the long march, to quote Mao Zedong, the long march to pick up stragglers. And now they present it in Game of Thrones as me as the king of the night, knocking down the wall, a bad guy with a bunch of ghosts with him. You know, that's how they present me, the Andrew and Eve, trying to smear my Mao Zedong march. Yeah, well, no, me, Ian, what's the difference, eh? We got people saying, I'm Ion now. Nick said that a couple weeks ago. Well, you're Ion, Bob. The power of my voice is ionic. My ideas are
Well, you charged
scenarios.
Up in that. That was like, what, September? So that's like 8 months. I mean, you started talking to him like 8 months after Ion was around. In 2009.
Wait. What are you referring to, 2009 or now?
Scott Wood.
What are you
Scott Woods.
Yeah, it was 2009.
Bob wants to say something to me. I'll chat you now.
Fine.
But
okay.
Nick, hey Nick, your personal life is exuding around the planet.
Bob, it's 3:36 a.m. in the morning, and I didn't realize that I muted myself. And I heard Ionic, Bob, and I went, "Oh my word!" And then I, "How are you?"
So who was that? Was that your what do you call those things? The escort service you were just talking to?
Yes. I was trying to listen. It's too early in the morning to be phoning. I'm on the phone to Bob, and she's going, "Who the hell is Bob?" I'm going, "Oh,
I don't know." We don't know yet what he is, but I gotta listen. I just tell him that.
Gotta listen.
But yeah, but what?
I said, Jimmy.
What? Yeah, what was Bert saying? Right, that last thought. What was his last thought? Scott
Wood.
Just
said I was. Did you? You were talking. You were 8 months.
Oh, the 9 months. I was talking to Scott Wood. Is that done in 2009 or 2008?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So I was doing it. Before March 2009 or through it?
Those interviews started like November 5th, I believe,
2008?
Or 9th. 2009. These are 2009.
Oh, okay. So I just gone
so I'm
public.
Saying
I think I noticed that the other day. We just started the radio show. We were just hearing from Matthew Hurtado. He kind of got a session in around November 4th or so. We started on October 21st on cash flow. We got to go back and listen to those. We were only on for an hour. What the hell happened in that hour? What did Ian say for about a month?
No, I'm saying about. I was just saying that I could sense the. I meant to ask you. It seems like you were influenced by your.
By Ion.
Engagement with Ion from in March, and then in November you started talking about rock and how you outlined that private identity disappearing in the 60s. That blew me away, by the way.
Yeah, I became more articulate about my old stuff once I'd interacted with Ion for a while. I could do the old stuff better because it was obsolete and I was processing the new stuff, so I could do the old stuff with some kind of new confidence or articulation, precision. So I was being very powerful saying my stuff, but presenting Ion as more powerful, so to speak.
It's sort of like you were, like you said, describing the old. You're processing because you were engaging you with Ion. But the insights, I look forward to listening to all of them because, my good. I mean, it's just, it was another view of your chart. You brought in your chart. And the whole thing of rock music was gone a long time ago. And I see that here in Europe because rock music here is very corporate. They have all the older musicians earn money in the concert scene in Europe. Mm. That's the whole thing. Corporate sponsors, they bring them over, and they do festivals and concerts in Europe. All of the old rockers. In fact, I was at a concert years ago on a mountain, and Deep Purple flew in on a private plane, and their plane was delayed, so they were late to their clip of part of the festival up in the mountain. So
they what?
Corporate, very corporate now.
Clip?
They delayed their part of the concert because their jet was delayed, and they had to fly into Geneva and then up to outside of other side of Zurich in the mountains.
Right. It's sort of they when they interview these old guys, they say, "Yeah, we're doing great, we're playing here," but you know they've gone to the farm system, which is Europe. You know, in baseball, the farm league. Europe is not America. It's not the where it's at energy of the latest stars, you know. So they do the B circuit, which is, you know, older people, I guess. Sarah says she has a question. Let's see. Benjamin, so we got just a minute, Sarah. We got where are these episodes Bert is referencing? Have you got the link there, Bert? You want to post it? The link to the Rock Critics? Yeah, and then what else? Bert, good. Frank says, good question, Bert. Brilliant response, Bob, regarding the speed of our disappearance and reappearance. Yeah, excellent fact that I gave there, Frank. Yes. and Sarah says, I watched, listened to Croker and Thompson, and they both praised Herbert. That'd be Herbert Marshall McLuhan. I'd be interested, Sarah, what particular tapes you listen to. I've listened to a lot of them, watched them.
It's all YouTube clips.
Yeah, but what were they, what era, what did they say? There's a lot on YouTube by Thompson.
You're absolutely right. But when I corresponded with Thompson, he said that the best thing to do when you find a thinker that has a history of publishing or, you know, a history of work is to start at the very end of what they've done and work backwards. And so this was brand new. He was talking about Trump being president. So I'll figure out.
We better put that on right away.
Yeah, that was why I brought up the fact, and so was the Croker thing, was pretty new too. And that's why I thought it was important to talk about the fact that they both highly praised McLuhan. Thompson even went as far as to say that he is quote unquote standing on the back of the giant McLuhan.
And he wouldn't say that. He wrote Andy McLuhan in the '70s and eighties. You know, I've made them come around.
I think so. And the fact that that's what I'm pointing out. It's like, wow, not only are these people realizing I didn't really think any of that originally, I somehow got it from Marshall McLuhan. Now they're thinking to praise him, you know, and I like that. I like it when someone gets their dues.
Their criticism of McLuhan in the 80s, 90s is wrong, but it's 20 years later. And so I guess they caught up.
I didn't know they openly didn't like him.
Okay, so I was. If you're not a member of Thompson's Facebook, you probably can't get to be a member. I was a member of Facebook, and then I seem to have gotten kicked off, and I'm not sure, last year around the time Trump came in. But you can't tell because Thompson sometimes gets sick, and then he just shuts everything down, and then he eventually comes back on. So he opened it up for me recently. So I discovered three notes by him to McLuhan when he arrived in Toronto in 68 in my new McLuhan 13,000 item archive. So I posted them sequentially. So maybe I should show you what he said. Let's go over there. First of all, maybe I could read what they said. I just wanted to check, is that you, Roxy, coming in as anonymous? Did I just unmute you? Well, we have to wait till she unmutes if that's her. And then there's Sean. Nick, do you think you're coming in as 011? I assumed that was you.
Not sure.
Earlier.
Not sure, Bob. Normally come in as Chicago.
Yeah, that's right. And you're here. I think you're under 011 now. So okay, so we go over to network error. I noticed, Carolyn, last night, Thursday night, when I was calling the Bob Fast Show, and I was playing the radio live, his network out of New York, every now and then it would go off and come back on. So there's a pulsing going on where we get disconnected. That's why the turbo bridge is always disconnecting after a few minutes. There's a pulsing thing happening. Okay, so I'm
Bob,
not
that also the cause of the muffled? Is that also cause
what?
Of the muffle? Like when we, is that the cause of the muffling on the show? Because I was re-listening to some clips last week, and there was a muffled sound, distortion.
There's static.
Yeah. Also on Carolyn's show as well. Also on Carolyn's show.
Yeah, there's static, and you can't make out what Carolyn's saying. You know, it fades out. Yeah, we don't know if it's our fault or Bill's fault, but it might be ours because they got Time Warner to put in a new system, and it's not perfect. They haven't. Maybe their fiber optic cables into our gated community is not able to take all the stuff yet, so it gets blocked, clogged. So Thompson wrote, let's see, try this one. He wrote in 1967. No, that's 1968. So I don't know where my first one is. But he did write this in October 1968 from York University, which was the new upstart leftist university in Toronto, started about 1964. And the University of Toronto establishment would kind of look down upon it. So Thompson had been teaching at MIT. He comes to he doesn't like what's happening in the United States with the Vietnam stuff and that and the divided intellectual atmosphere and campus. So he moves to Canada, gets a job at York University through Frank Zingroni, who had been a student of McLuhan at St. Michael's, the Catholic part of University of Toronto, and Zingroni was a professor by 65 at MIT, so they met each other, and they both sort of got into McLuhan or saw him speak at Harvard, MIT at the same time. So I don't know where he spoke, probably MIT. So here it is, October 11, 1968, and Thompson is writing. He's now in Toronto. He's a exile, I guess you call it, and he says, dear, and he doesn't know that McLuhan's just come back from New York a few weeks before. McLuhan has a new co-chos. I'm assuming he's moved into the co-chos, and he's no longer at 96 St. Joseph Street, but Thompson thinks he's still at 96 St. Joseph Street. So he says, dear Professor McLuhan, last spring, one of your former students, then a colleague of mine at MIT, Frank Zingroni, spent much time at lunch discussing your theories and observations and comparing them with work I was doing on California. Thompson had written an essay, The Role of L.A. Being the Future, the way Los Angeles was in the 60s. It was miming what was happening to the world.
You mean like the song Hotel California?
No, that'd be more personal. This is more collective stuff. That's personal depression, Hotel California. This is the cultural mixture, media mixture of L.A., and maybe its melting pot aspect. So that essay got out there somewhere. Frank knew Thompson's work, so he said, it sounds like you're doing McLuhan a bit, or you're similar. So Thompson says, Frank seemed to think my synaptic imagination was very much like your own, and that since I was leaving Cambridge for Toronto, that it would be worthwhile for us to get together and talk about life at the edge of history. That was the name of his 1971 book, and it opens with the L.A. essay, which he wrote 67-68, then his book At the Edge of History in 71, which wins in it ties with Stuart Brand's Whole Earth Catalog for Book of the Year or something. So Frank thought it would be worthwhile for us to get together and talk about life at the edge of history. You from the perspective of the northern edge in Canada, and I from the western edge in California. Now I realize that since you began studying the media, they have returned the compliment, and that you are not easily open to intellectual tinkers hawking their wares in the streets or at your doorstep. I'll do that again. Now I realize that since you began studying the media, they have returned the compliment, and that you are not easily open to intellectual tinkers hawking their wares in the streets or at your doorstep. But I thought you just might pause a moment to listen to a few of my street cries of Los Angeles. Since the observations I make about the TV structure of the megalopolis are part of your field of vision, I decide to take a chance and send the enclosed on to you. So he sends the essay to him. Since this essay is only chapter one of Reflections at the Edge of History, I thought that if you liked the piece, we might be able to get together and swap apocalyptic visions. With best wishes, yours sincerely, William I. Thompson, Associate Professor of Humanities at Winters College in York University. So we have to go over to Thompson's place and show you what he said. So I had not posted on there. The last time I've been on there, he didn't like what I was posting, and that may have been why I was banned. I don't know if I got banned or might have. I don't know. And but also I'm back on. So he says.
So well, first, when Bob read me that the other day, I said, you know, Thompson's being a bit prickly there, you know, implying that.
He's equal to McLuhan.
He's equal to McLuhan, and McLuhan is probably going to slough him off because he's got an ego now that he's in the media. So it's,
Who's got an ego?
Thompson was implying that McLuhan had too much of an ego now to bother with Thompson.
Right. He's covering his rejection. What is he doing? He's covering his rejection. He's covering his rejection. But he's saying McLuhan should not worry about that. He should acknowledge Bill. Okay, so I started off by saying I was given 13,000 items earlier this year from the McLuhan Archives in Ottawa. I found this in the collection, Bill. Now you got to figure out how to bring it up. How do you bring up something on the side of his Facebook page? I don't know where it is. It's hard to bring it up.
You might want to right click and then choose open a new tab. See if that works.
Okay, right click. What do you, where's what the point?
But we have Mac.
Yeah, sometimes if you just do it, though. Sorry, go ahead, Carolyn.
Double click, Bob.
Yeah, like.
Just keep clicking.
Well, like.
Yeah, yeah. Just keep doing it. Instant gratification. Hit the button, Bob.
Okay, I found.
He kept clicking.
He got it. So what is it?
Carolyn, right again.
Sometimes Bob's afraid to click. He'll say, Carolyn, what do I do here? Click, Bob, just click.
Well, yeah, because it's really like his livelihood's on the line because you know, you threatened him if he keeps clicking on this stuff and ruining your credit cards. So I would be leery if I were him, too.
Cards, they're always muffled. I never know what she's fucking saying.
You're not supposed to, Bob. I'm making fun of you.
Put your mouth away from the phone,
how
Sarah.
You killed the last
right person.
Yeah, that's what you're like. Yeah, move it away. Go the other direction. Move mouth away from phone.
I have a studio mic. I just need to hook
studio
it up
mic.
And then.
See, all you guys at the high tech causes problems. Don't use.
It's not very
mic.
High tech. I just need to see if it sounds better than this, and to do that, I'd have to do like a
test
run.
Well, that's a little better right now. Did you adjust something?
I sat down, so I'm not moving as much.
Okay. All right. So listen. So what I first posted, this is what I found first. The article in the Toronto Star by Richard Needham, a well-known columnist there, where he says maybe Thompson's more important than McLuhan. But that's 1972. So he writes this letter. Thompson wrote the letter I just read, and McLuhan doesn't answer it. So Bill says something about that. You got to find out where his comment is. But before that letter, I sent him this article. And he and I had talked about this article back in the 90s in New York because after the article came out, Thompson came to a Monday night seminar with Frank Cingroni, so probably the fall of 72, and was going to say to McLuhan that he didn't agree with that. He didn't want that to cause a problem with him and McLuhan. And he hasn't met McLuhan yet, and he's been in New York, in Toronto for 4 years. And so McLuhan, according to Thompson, kind of ignored Bill in the audience of the seminar. I don't know if Bill ever said anything, but they never connected. There was a wall put up, Bill said, between him and McLuhan. So he thought McLuhan knew who he was and wasn't interested in him because of the article. So let's read the article and see what we learn from it. So this is the problem between Thompson and McLuhan, you know, 40 years ago, before Thompson can relax and be obsolete and over the hill and then admit McLuhan was important, the way you guys say he just said it in some recording. So let's see. So here's what Richard Needham says. The only way out is out. Some years ago, the great cham around these parts, sort of like a slang term, cham, the great conversation, or the great champion. Some years ago, the great cham around these parts and many other parts was Marshall McLuhan. Today, Dr. McLuhan appears to have a rival, perhaps a successor in the person of William Irwin Thompson, a considerably younger man, 34 years old, who left the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, the MIT, some years back to teach in the humanities division at York University. Time magazine did a three-page interview with Thompson last month, and he has a long article called The Individual as Institution in the current issue of Harper's Magazine. Okay, just a second. Got to move this around a bit. Much of what Dr. Thompson says is over my head, and there's nothing wrong about that. I have the same experience with Dr. McLuhan and with my favorite philosopher, George Santayana. They don't have to apologize for knowing more than I, and I don't have to apologize for knowing less than they. What Dr. Thompson has done, both in Time Magazine and Harper's Magazine, is to give me a new thought, a new idea, and that to me is always worth a king's ransom. What's the new thought? Well, just this. For many years now, I and a lot of other people have bemoaned the diminishing stature of the individual man or woman. He, she, so the story goes on or runs, so this, it's a little cut off. He, she, so the story goes, was becoming a mere cog in the great machine of big business, a mere pawn on the giant checkerboard of politics, a mere cipher in the computers of the school and university system. He, she had become powerless against and within an over-organized, over-centralized society. Not so, claims Dr. Thompson. The new people, in quotes, the new people, the thinkers and mystics, are moving out of the existing social, political, and business system, which are the old people, the managers and the mechanics. So the new people, the thinkers and mystics, are moving out of the existing social, political, and business system, the old people, the managers and mechanics. And they're left behind, so busy tinkering with their machines and their memoranda that they can't see what's happening. In brackets, did the dinosaur know he had become obsolete? End of bracket. Dr. Thompson told Time Magazine, quote, there's that blip, blip, blip. Oh, by the way, Brian, is that you from Toronto? There was a Toronto. Is that you, Brian? Or someone else?
Hello? It's not me right now going,
I don't know if that's you.
Yes, it is. I just heard you do
Skype,
it.
Bob. Someone calling
no,
you
No, you weren't
Bob.
Here last week, Brian. And so it wasn't you. So what'd you say, Bert?
Yeah, I think Bert's right.
Someone's calling you on Skype.
Oh. Well, what do I do with that? You go over to Skype and you look for what?
Yeah, that's like a ringtone. That's what it sounds like.
You're recent. Look in recent. Your recent tab on the left. In, on Skype.
No, nothing called recent. I may have an older system. Recent. No recent.
Okay.
Beep, beep. So, yeah, bring him in, Bill. I don't know what that's about. Yeah, it's not obvious. Home, contacts, untitled, history, you know. What the fuck is it? Dots, online, Skype, all. Those are the only words available. So we know what it is. Okay, so then, Thompson told Time magazine, quote, "We must realize that there are areas of human culture